Yeah, it does happen. It does happen. Those were names I chose because there were no names on the ship's manifest. Negro man, Negro woman, Negro child. But I felt they had to be named because naming is universally important. And in African cultures, you know, some of them even say that the child is not human until the name is given. So to think of them having lost their names, I felt it was important to at least pay respect to that practice. But yes, I certainly feel that. I did a reading a couple weeks ago in Miami at the West Indian Lit Conference. And at the end of it, a couple of us were, it was at a beach, a tradition, a former coloreds only beach. So there was a lot of history there. But we went down to the water and we were just sort of singing a repetitious phrase from the work. And there was a moment when it was a young, two young students, and I had this moment when I felt, oh, they're happy. And I said to her, can you feel that they're happy? And she was going through a particular difficult period because her grandmother had been burnt and in hospital. She said, no, I can't feel that, I just feel the pain. But I said, well, I have a sense of that. It was just something about facing the Atlantic and just repeating, oh yeah, yeah, Atlantico, oh yeah, yeah, Atlantico, oh yeah, yeah, Atlantico, which is a sort of riff on Atlantic. Yeah? Yeah, so yes, thanks for the question. I just want to thank Steve. I want to thank my dear friend and colleague, Professor Tanya Foster, for having me here, and for both of them for collaborating, and for all of you for creating a space where I felt safe enough to do this. Because I do feel afraid often, and I'm not sure why, because I'm not a performer. I'm just a poet. But something about this impels me to move into it. That's interesting because I was going through the different ringtones today and trying to pick another one. And there's something about the one that I use. It has an electronic sound to it as well as having a rhythm. And that's important because I feel very much that technology was very implicated. Well, technology was implicated deeply in slavery. It's the technology of the time. Sails and wind patterns and so on. But something about digital technology was very much implicated in this work. So I'm always trying to find the sound that goes with that. So there's a sound on here that's a drum. Timba, but it was too traditional, and there's something about this, the one that I use, censure. Maybe I should get Apple to pay for my research into finding a great ringtone, yes? I have thought of it. Anyway, so I just wanted to thank all of you for being here and allowing me to explore what this continues to mean to me. Thank you. And all the work that's gone into this, Patrick, for taking the books that I schlepped from Toronto. Because I say, you know, I feel like I haven't arrived as a poet because I'm still schlepping books around, you know. And that will be a sign that I have arrived when I don't have to take a book anywhere except the one I'm reading from. So thank you, Patrick, and everyone else. Yeah.
Yes. Thank you. Just if you could a little bit about how you developed or how you moved into a more kind of ritual, performative relationship to the work and project.
It has been growing over time, and I don't ever do much more than this. I have used a mask sometimes, but some of this comes out of my own tradition. So masking is part of carnival. And this mask is interesting because below that there's another. I had a dream many years ago when I was leaving law to write, and it was of a red background, and there was a heart, and on the heart were these hieroglyphic writings. And so I made a a picture of it, and I painted the mask. But recently I was trying to repair the mask, and I was trying to repaint the red and paint on the white hieroglyphs, and the red was different. And so I painted the whole thing, and then I was sanding it down, and it came up like this. So I thought, well, I'll use it like that, but make another one based on the dream. So there's a layer to that. But masking is very much part of the Caribbean tradition. And the bell, we have a group in Trinidad and Tobago called the Shouter Baptists. Some of you may know them, Spiritual Baptists. And they were outlawed, but they use the bell. They're Christian. They were outlawed because their practices had too many Africanisms in it, like scattering grain and the center pole and so on. So the bell is a sort of homage to them, because they are often at the street corners and they do a lot of testifying, and they do seaside baptisms, which are very beautiful with flowers and so on. So I think that is what surfaces. And the Caribbean culture is very performative. Do you know, people are always performing in certain ways. So I think that's part of what's happening, but I also think there must be some memory of those customs that were lost coming out of the trade and coming out of slavery. And for me, it just gives me a chance to honor these people who remain unnamed. Yeah.
So I have a question. Why is it important? I mean, I noticed we read together, and I was thinking about we've talked a little bit about performance and the idea of not performing this for the audience in front, but it's something else, it seems, that's going on, and that we are brought into it. And so I'm just asking if you could speak to that a little bit.
What do you think is going on? You say something else.
Well, because I don't think of you as standing here performing and we're just observers. Yeah. That somehow we're brought into certainly a ceremony and a ritual.
Are you hearing back there? No, because the mic isn't amplifying. Tanya, you want to, because I think it's an, can you just turn?
Well, I was hoping you could talk
to. No, but just at least repeat the question so that.
Right. The question was about why we're invited into a performance that's a part of.
So again, you know, that your question brings to mind, again, carnival. In Trinidad, it comes out of the French tradition, but also the African traditions of masking and ritual performance outdoors. And what often happens is that you're both spectator and participant. So you might be looking on for a moment, but then you enter it and you're part of it, and then you step out of it, you know. So I suspect that's some of what is going on. But I also think that we are all implicated in this. So I think it's a very natural and maybe logical, in the better sense of the word, extrapolation of the work, because I really believed when I was doing it that I wanted the work to contaminate all of us. And there's a sense in which we are all already contaminated, just by virtue of where we live. You know, we're forced to buy clothes that are made by sweatshops and all kinds of things. We drink coffee, tea, all those things. And I know all of us in this room would prefer not to do that, but we do it. So there's a sense in which there's blood on all our hands. So there's that sense of continuing that. And so I felt very much that when the reader is reading it, he or she or they become, they make a choice as to whether they're going to let themselves understand what's really going on or if they're going to stand away. But there's a sense in which we're all in this together. So I think that is the best answer to that. I think someone had a question. Yeah. Thank you for that question, Tanya.
It's a little bit similar, but more personal and I think you address this in the afterword in the book, it is so terrifying to take on the psyches and identity of people who were so brutalized. And so that occasion of that event in that ship, and then also the whole fact of slavery, and or other events that one thinks of, and if you have a personal family or whatever, you know, it's more. And yet there's a sense of joy in the work, I feel. Was it something that was there a time when it was overwhelming and hard and then it became easier or more joyful, or is it always both? Or I guess that's mm-hmm. the question.
So yeah, that's interesting, because you said it's terrifying taking on the personas of the people. I think the most terrifying thing for me was taking on the persona of the white male European mm-hmm. who realizes that he has stepped over the line, and he's going into a fugue state, he's losing it, and he at the end jumps overboard with the man, Wale, who has him write the letter, eats it, and jumps overboard. So that was very terrifying for me, and I had a big struggle, and it was very difficult to write some of that. But the joy, I think, it surprises me that I find that so often, particularly in that last section where language has completely degraded to sound. But underneath, I hear another language going on, and I think it's a testament to the spirit of the African person, people who were enslaved, that they had to find a way out of nowhere, as they say, in the United States. And that ability to find, if not joy, but something to move to something larger, perhaps, is very much a part of our culture. So it surprises me. And one of the things I've said before, I do these annual readings of the whole book. I invite people and we all read the book together. And at the end of it, you would think that we would feel burdened by it all, but it has the reverse effect, that by the end of it, we feel absolutely almost cleaned out in a psychic, emotional sense. So it's really odd. I haven't sort of analyzed this. I don't know if I want to, but I think there's something there in that. Yeah.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Would you mind talking a little bit about your writing process related to genre? So I'm thinking, when you have a book like Harriet's Daughter that's narrative driven, and then you have She Tries Her Tongue, where you can start sort of anywhere on the page, is there something different calling to you in when you do that kind of difference?
I think the common thread, is language. It's I think that's the issue that chose me. And I feel like with many, if not most writers, something chooses you and then you're condemned for the rest of your life to sort of come at it. So, because in Harriet's Daughter, there are sections where she says to her friend, it's about the friendship between these two girls in Toronto of Caribbean background. One's born there and one has just come up to be with her mother, whom she hasn't lived with. But she's saying to her friend from Tobago, teach me, how to talk, Tobago talk. I want to be bilingual. Because of course, when we talk about bilingual in Canada, it's always French and English. But apart from that, everyone in that book is speaking a different version of English. So there's Mrs. Billings, who's from the United States. There's Zoma from Tobago. There's Margaret, who's born there. Her mother is Jamaican, but doesn't like to, as they say, chat patois. She likes to pretend that she doesn't know how to speak it. And her father is this Bajan man from Barbados, who speaks this very proper colonial kind of English. So in a meta sense, the text is about language and how language is functioning and how each of those each version of English suggests something about the person. And she tries her tongue similarly, and in this one, similarly. Zong, yeah. And, oh, I should just add, I wrote fiction because I thought I could make some money writing fiction to pay for my habit, which is poetry, but it didn't. Didn't find any, I wasn't dealing properly enough. Still looking for an agent, anyway. Trying to find the dealer. I think there was a question. There was another one.
Yeah, actually, not a question so much as just a comment. I wanted to say that I really appreciate you sharing from this work with us. And I guess I do have a question, which is whether you have ever read or had people participate in the very last section of the book, Ibora, or whether that is something that is more for each individual to look at themselves on the page.
No, we've done it. We've done it at those durational readings, and it's really hell. But I remember years ago seeing something on YouTube where a young Filipino boy, I didn't understand myself how I could read that section. But this young Filipino boy was, there was something about what English sounds like to someone who doesn't speak it. And then I realized, but of course, if you're somewhere and you don't understand the language, it sounds like gibberish. And so this is gibberish. This is, so when I attempt to read it, it would be something like, salve the slave, this is but an, to sin, sobs, loss within. You know, I think that's how you hear, if you know a few words of a language, a lot of it sounds like gibberish. You may recognize a couple of words. But it, I think that was what gave me the key to found a hero, Jin my us in Afrique, your ear, a big rum. My Negroes, that asters, and so. So, but we do try to read it. Usually it's around 1 or 2 in the morning, so. We're not doing very well.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for being here. And thanks to Tanya for bringing you and everyone else involved. I have 2 questions. The second one's very short. The first one is, this is something that everyone in here who's a writer, I think, may kind of face. Talk about the difference between your work when it's read in a book by people and when it's performed or read by you in front of an audience, and how the differences you see in what you want folks to get out of it.
The difference. Well, what I would hope is that if people have seen me perform, that they will bring some of that to when they read it. Often people say that, you know, they like to hear the poet's voice, because I think poetry, in its roots, it's performative, it's oral. And so there's a sense in which the performance takes it back to something older, yes? But we live in a very literate culture, and I've said this in the last couple of days since I've been here, that because of my coming from a colony and not, forgive me. Coming from a colony and having a certain kind of colonial education, like Calypso was forbidden, you know, in my home, you know, no parent wanted their child to be with anybody who played Pan, you know, because those art forms, in a way, like hip-hop and so on here often were developed in those areas that were from a socioeconomic level in the Caribbean, in Trinidad definitely, that middle class or aspiring middle class people didn't want their kids. So what I'm saying is that I feel hampered that I don't have those sort of oral African New World art forms. So for me, it's really a gift to me to find that there's a way I can take this work back to orality. And one of the things I have said recently, I discovered that there's the Yoruba have a very ancient art form called Oriki. It's like praise poems. And I just wanted to share that I understood this to be, working within the tradition of modernism, fragments, the way the colonial text has been fragmented, we've been fragmented, but Oriki works with fragments, and this is like age old, and it's coded, and people have to sort of read into it. So that was really interesting, and that's an oral form as well. So again, I think, this is interesting. This is a way maybe of my connecting with something that's older and sort of subverting that colonial education and heritage that I have. I can't change that. Yeah?
As a follow-up, do you always write with the idea of ultimately being performed live or sometimes maybe just being on the paper?
No, this was not written with it being performed in the way I do it here. It was written in the way I tend to write poetry, on the page, and then you get up and read it.
The small question was, on the little pieces of paper of at the end there, were we supposed to repeat our phrases over and over again or read it just once? How was that?
Any way you wanted to do it.
Thanks.
It was so short that you could repeat it, yes?
Yeah,
that was the point of it. And I was saying to Steve that because it's so short, it's not as intimidating. So you just have this little piece of paper. And if you fold it, actually, you can make a little boat like this. with the text of song. So now you all laugh, but I made a number of these, almost 100, and gave them out to the people at the conference I was at 2 weeks ago. But it's a fun thing to do. Not making light of the subject, but.
Thank you. Thank you so much. My question is kind of about language, but also there's a piece of yours that's really close to me, This Place, The Space Between. Mm-hmm. And I had never thought across the two pieces, but there was a moment in the reading where you stepped this way and it was like, she, Negro, queen, whore. And I started thinking about sexual labor, and I know in This Place you talk about needing a new language and the language of the Djimet poet, and so I guess I'm wanting to hear kind of your thoughts about like how black women's bodies and their sexual labor shows up in song, and then I'm curious to hear you talk a little bit more about what the Djimet poet sounds like.
Mm. So what's your name?
Malaika.
Okay, Djimets were supposedly the word comes from diamètre, the French for diameter, but in the French Creole, Djimet. And there were women, primarily, who were supposed to be below the socially acceptable line. And I remember when I grew up, my mother used to say to me, don't be so loud, you sound like a Djimet. Mm-hmm. Now, they weren't necessarily prostitutes, but they were street women. They had gangs. One gang was called, one of the ones that I've read about, the Don't Give a Dams. and they also fought. We have an art form called stick fighting. They fought with sticks. And they had these lovely names like Big Body Ada and names that really spoke to their power. So in the piece that Malaika is talking about, it starts off where I question when we as women say, is it safe to be somewhere? We're not asking whether our handbag is safe. We're asking if the space between our legs, like if you break it right down, is it safe to walk through that alleyway? Yeah, so starting with displace, the space between, I then make a link between that and the way the black woman's body was harvested in the same way that the land in the Caribbean was harvested and here in the United States. And then I take it from there in terms of how we take up or don't take up space as women. And so it's a piece that is going between different genres. There's poetry, there's a play in which this Janet woman has been brought before the court, and all these Janet women come in and try to rescue her. And then it also talks about carnival, where it's one of the few times where women can be scantily dressed and not really be worried about it. Because usually these big bands with women with the beads and bikini, like they're people protecting the bands and so on. So there's that sense, and actually your question makes me think of when I was shouting Dayo, because even to be loud is not something that we should be as women, as black women, you know, you have to be proper. So how does, I think it's there in the text in terms of how this woman is seen, and I sense that this white male European has fallen in love with her, but he doesn't want to admit to his desire, and so he calls her a whore, and men are gambling for her, and so on. Yeah, so it is there in that text. And what's interesting as well is that when this case came before the court, Granville Sharp wrote a letter to the Lords of Admiralty. And so the women were valued at less than the men. Yeah, so the men were like 50 pounds and the women were 30. So there was a whole argument about the value of the different genders. Yeah, yeah. Is that it?
Thank you. Is this working at all?
It doesn't amplify, it just records.
Got it. I finally understood. Okay. I wanted to just ask you more about what you said about the imbrication of digital technology mm-hmm. in the work, because I think of it always as being so material, and you gave us these pieces of cloth, so that is really new to my experience, to have you with this cell phone. And it feels very much like a new form of mediumship, but I was just wondering if you could talk more about how digital technology is implicated in the work. Does it have something to do with the global network, which is like a more updated version of the network that whose violence you're tracing in the work, or is it something to do with your process of having broken down the language ? I'm not sure.
Yeah, there's a sense in which I've always felt that this work, it's almost as if the work was waiting on the technology. And that I suppose I could have written it on the typewriter. I still have my old typewriter, I have to confess. My IBM selected. But there are certain ways in which when I was spreading the text out, that it seemed that working with the computer was very integral to that. Though that last section, those pages, every time I would print I think I say this in the Notanda, it would come out sort of crumped like that, and it would not. And I was going to pitch the pages. I just kept them. And at the end, a family member said, no, I should actually include them. So really the question is important, but I'm still exploring it. because the using the ringtones came about when I was timing myself on one occasion, and the ringtone before I did a reading, and then I suddenly thought, oh, I can use the ringtone to, and it speaks to communication and communication across time, and it links to Marconi talking about this idea that sound never dies in water, that sound remains, so that there's something about the cell phone ringing. Usually we think we're talking to somebody, the cell phone ring, that has echoes and resonances of some of those ideas in the text. But it's something that I want to spend some time. We just, in Canada, started a huge fund at the Canada Council called the Digital Fund, and there is a sort of research part of it. So I want to apply for that in the next couple of years and work with someone to explore how I might use technology with it. Yeah. And the last thing I should add there, I don't know how many of you know Yoruba divination and how it works. It's a binary system. It's 2 and 1, 2 and 1. First computer. If you see how it's, I'm not making this up. If you look at the way it's set out whenever they throw the, whether it be cowrie shells or whatever, but it's that binary system. And there are people who have written on it. So there's also that aspect to it, that there's something coded. There's some code there that I'm interested in exploring. Yeah? That's it. I think everybody's thirsty, would like something to drink. I want to thank you, unless there's a burning question. Thank you all so much.